All right, be careful on those roads. Thank you, Joanna Campbell. And let's launch into our discussion about President Barack Obama, the first 100 days. There was a lot to talk about here. There's much going on in the world, the interrelated conflicts in Afghanistan and Pakistan, what's happening with the new Israeli prime minister, our economy, whether we can discuss whether or not in these first 100 days that President Barack Obama has stood up to or has been too reluctant to challenge the traditional interests on Wall Street and Capitol Hill. We'll look at the question of civil liberties and the release of the terrorism papers. The torture papers, and people are arguing on both sides. A, it shouldn't have been released. B, that there should be a prosecution and investigation. They're saying, no, you did the exactly right thing. It was torture, but we should not be prosecuting anybody. We'll look at that. We'll look at questions in the environment and healthcare and more when we analyze these first 100 days of President Barack Obama with our two guests. Dr. Lester Spence is assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, is making his way to the studio. Right now he's in his car. Lester, welcome. Please be careful talking on the phone and driving with us here.
There you go. Thanks a lot,
Adam. Don't want anything to happen to you. Dr.
Jared. Don't put it on the universe, man.
No, it's just the opposite. I'm trying to trying to put that white light around your car until you get here.
Okay.
Dr. Jared Ball is with us in studio. He's assistant professor of communication studies at Morgan State University. And Jared, good to have you in the studio. Good to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So let's begin by talking about these first 100 days. And I guess both of you watched the president last night in his press conference. That's all part of this discussion as well. And I also will see if we can kind of twist into part of this conversation before the hour's up is the fact that both of you are scholars, political scientists, and in some ways both of you have kind of this hip-hop scholar thing as well. And so and you both tie that into your work politically and your analysis of Obama and the nation. So we'll see if we can twist all that in this conversation and see where that takes us. But let me start with you in a broad sense, Jared, and then we'll go to Lester. Give us your thumbnail analysis of the first 100 days of Barack Obama.
Well, again, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure
to
be here.
It's always a pleasure to have
you. Yeah. I think it depends on what our standard is. I would like to see us raise our standard to judge him on something other than he's not Bush and on something other than he's a Democratic Party candidate and now president. So I say that to say that I would like to see things, I would like to use those higher standards to judge him, to put some more pressure on him. And I would like to see us, particularly those of us who say we're on the progressive left, to develop a movement to put the kind of pressure on him, which he has asked us to do in various ways, so that we can get past some of what I think are not real changes, are not substantive changes, and are more showmanship and in their, you know, most pernicious sense, propaganda. So I would like to see things, the standard get raised so that we don't, that we have a stimulus package for the people, so to speak, and a bailout package for the people, so to speak, and that we have a genuine end to the military conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, which he is not going to end. And in fact, it is escalating. I would like to see us challenge him further so that the military budget itself is reduced so that we can do more to take care of humanity. He's often attached to the civil and human rights struggles. So I'd like to see us put judge him on those standards as opposed to mainstream electoral political standards so that we can move things much further than they are and that we can actually make him be the president that many assumed he was going to be when they voted for him, which I and some others felt that he was not going to be, so that we can, you know, sort of unify and push all of us into a better position. So, you know, I would like to see all of this occur primarily so that we can get a real health care plan, which he is not proposing, not one that many of us either assumed he was going to put together or wanted him to put together. I mentioned the military escalation. I would like to see us certainly get on track with this Employee Free Choice Act, which seems to be falling by the wayside. So, in other words, I want us to get beyond just the sort of euphoria of a black president, the euphoria over the symbolism of this beautiful couple with their beautiful children in the White House, past sort of those sort of, you know, more or less empty symbols, and to again put ourselves on the standard of the struggles that he sort of was both as I try to argue, was sort of connectedly distant from. In other words, you know, he wanted to be sure to be connected to King, to the civil and human rights struggle. We now have scholars in my generation wanting to connect him to the Black Power movement as an extension of or a culmination of that movement. And I couldn't disagree more. And primarily it's because we don't use those people as the standard, which would mean an end to poverty, an end to war, an end to racial inequality, an end to mass incarceration and police brutality, greater distributions of wealth and benefits from the society, as opposed to, you know, sort of, you know, more or less, like I said, symbolic changes. And just also to remind people that we did not need to see a Black man and woman in the White House to have Black male and female role models from which we could derive senses of empowerment and strength. So when we hear people saying that he is ushering a new psychological age, I think we need to check that a little bit and be a little more careful, because as others like the late great Dr. Amos Wilson used to say and talk often about, that there was a disconnect between the rise of Black politicians and Black entertainers and even some degrees of a Black middle class and Black self-esteem. So we would still see the same negative self-images among a mass of our people in our community, which I think is what we're still going to see if we don't have the more of the complete and culmination of a movement that I don't think Obama is, that he's being given credit for.
Lester Spence, I have a feeling that your take is a tad different.
Actually, it is a tad different. So it's not different enough that this is going to be one of these shows where your guys will be going back and forth. But it's going to be different enough that I think we can engage in a conversation about how to move Obama to the left, which is where he needs to be. So the difference I have with Professor Ball is that I think it's important to really say concretely what the material benefits are. So there are some material benefits, right? And there are some benefits that are about not a material necessarily, but process oriented. For example, when he rolls back Bush's secrecy program, right? When he rolls back Bush's policies related to the Freedom of Information Act, that's important, right? So what Bush does when he gets in office is he says that when anybody wants to know anything that any president did in the past, the default is going to be no, right? And the previous president has the right to automatically say, no, I don't want that released, right? Now, democracy at its best depends on transparency, right? So when Barack Obama says, no, we're not going to have that, and even when I say that I don't think this should be released, I'm going to have a process of checks and balances where the attorney general is going to be able to overrule me, right? That's important, right? When he extends unemployment benefits and health insurance for people who got hit by the economy, that's important. We can't just write that off, right? We can't just write off the fact that he has like a women's council for the first time, because most of the policies the government passes has a disparate impact on over half of its citizenry, but we never analyzed that. That's really important. Now, I agree with Professor Ball that we need to move him a lot further to the left, but my challenge is that we have to actually say what he's doing, because inevitably, in moving him further to the left, it's not just going to be about those of us on the progressive left pushing him. It's going to be based on the citizenry pushing him, being informed about what they have and on what we need to get, right?
So, well, let's take some specifics here. We open the lines at 410-319-8888. Your take on President Barack Obama at his first 100 days, his speech is to the station, to the nation last night, his conversation at his press conference. 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. It is 11 minutes after the hour, and we're talking to Dr. Lester Spence and Dr. Jared Ball. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Let's just take two huge issues facing this country. And one is foreign policy and where he's taking this country, the leadership he's showing. We have a very unstable Iraq that is, on some level, some people say, imploding again. People are saying, well, we have a responsibility. Some people are arguing to leave troops there to help stabilize the situation we created. Others saying, bring them home now. And then we have, a little further over, the war we began in Afghanistan to go after Osama bin Laden. But now it has spilled over to become a war in two countries. It's Afghanistan and Pakistan. And the Taliban is moving on Islamabad, in the capital of Pakistan. And Pakistan is a nuclear power. This is a very volatile region. This might be even bigger than what's happening in Iraq. So let's talk about where we are with that and the dangers we face and what has to happen there before moving to some other policy areas and what we think of the president's response and his administration's response to all this. Jared, you can start.
Well, I mean, again, we have to dispel some of the mythology here that he has never, you know, part of one of the problems that I've had with this whole campaign and his presidency so far is that many of us have sort of filled in blanks that he has left for us and assumed things that he has never said. So first of all, I would say he needs to get all the troops out and begin immediate reparations for that country. And then we should extend that to reparations for all the people that he abandoned with the World Conference Against Racism, which I hope we can talk about at some point in this program. But he has said he is leaving 50,000 troops, if you read the fine print, 50,000 troops, and that says nothing of the many more non-military private contractors that he has said nothing about taking out, who are even more there in greater force than the military. He's leaving the largest embassy in the world in Iraq, and to do what is hard to say. But I could. The assumption is, for me at least, that it's not to repair the country and it's not to take care of the problems that this nation, our nation, is now responsible for, as the UN has already declared decades ago, that when you invade a country, you are then responsible for all that happens afterwards. The same thing with Afghanistan. He is ramping up the deployment in Afghanistan, which he has now called AFPAC, as you said, to the unification of the struggle in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And he is, according to Juan Cole, increasing the potential for this nuclear holocaust that is represented in Pakistan by challenging unnecessarily the Taliban. And so Juan Cole says the Taliban is not any real threat to either Afghanistan or Pakistan, and that only through these unmanned drone bombings that Obama has been sanctioning since his very first day in office, killing tens and hundreds of civilians a day and in a week, is increasing the resistance among the Taliban. It's increasing the danger and the threat, as opposed to pulling back and doing what every other nation, every other imperial invading force has learned in dealing with Afghanistan, that you can't go in there this way. So instead of looking at the history, looking at the advice of more sober counsel, he is increasing the threat over there and increasing the threat and danger to American service personnel.
Lester?
Yeah, now this is the challenge, right? So, you know, my focus on his first 100 days has been largely on the domestic stuff, with the exception of the torture papers, largely because that's the area where I feel the American citizenry have the greatest potential to push, right? They can look at their own circumstances and say, listen, I'm not where I was supposed to be. I'm not where this guy actually thought that where I thought this guy would take me, and I need the government to do more, right? But it's hard to have that conversation on foreign policy because the foreign policy is so black boxed that it's not like people, regular people, the people that we normally come in contact with feel like they have any pushback, right? That's why you can have a conversation on the torture papers and say, well, wow, the question is whether it works or not, rather than what is this illegal, right? So, I mean, I think that's the area that's going to be the, as far as looking the next hundred, looking at the next 100 days, looking at the next 3 3/4 years, that's going to be the area where, to be honest, I'm kind of a visionary, but I don't see how we push him here.
Well, I think one of the problems that we have is that as has been reported, the anti-war movement is being weakened simply by Obama's presence and his statements that really have no substance about ending the war in Iraq. So that was my biggest concern going into all of this, that many of us who are concerned with the material and social conditions of people in this country and around the world, we have lost steam. We have lost something around which we can rally and organize because of Obama's appearance and the image of his presidency. So this is one of my major concerns, that too much of our elation has weakened any potential to organize. And as someone who does try to follow left of center politics and social political organization, I see a lot of confusion, a lot of disunity, a lot of a lack of clarity in terms of where to go from here. So I'm actually concerned. So I'm hoping people will say, look, we have real problems here. We're not having our issues addressed, and let's move to organize something.
I'm going to open the phones here, but I think that there are two things we'll raise. One, Juan Cole will be on this show shortly in the next couple of weeks to talk about his new book. And I would challenge him when he's on the show to say the Taliban is not a threat to Pakistan or Afghanistan. I think that the rise of kind of fundamentalist leadership in some aspects of Islam in that part of the world and the Pashtun culture together, which was a nation unto itself until the British divided them, do pose that kind of threat. I mean, you talk to people from Afghanistan, Pakistan, they're terrified of what's happening in Swat and what could happen back in Afghanistan. And what the response should be from the United States of America is the question.
But Obama ran on more diplomacy, less military.
Right.
He's doing the exact opposite in this case.
And that's,
as far as responding, that's right.
So we're going to hit some domestic issues here and more. 410-319-8888. Your take on President Barack Obama's first 100 days. We're talking with Dr. Lester Spence from Johns Hopkins University and Dr. Jared Ball from here at Morgan State University. 410-319-8888. And let's see. Let's go to Darren on the east side of Baltimore. You're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Hi, Darren.
Thanks for taking my call. Let me say peace to Jared, who's our friend and a comrade.
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good, Brother Jared. How you doing, man? It's always good to hear you on these airwaves. But I guess my take on the first 100 days would have to be that it's been a myth versus the reality with President Barack Obama. Coming from, I guess, a black perspective, one of the things I would have to ask is why is it that the black national...
Darren, call back and we'll get you back on the air. I don't know what just happened, but we didn't cut you off. So I want to let you know that. We wouldn't do that.
Over his policy.
Go ahead, you're there.
The reason why I asked that, on April the 4th, as we were celebrating and commemorating Dr. King, a man of peace, who talked about, of course, the end.
Is that us or him? So we'll find out. So hold on, Darren, to try to call back, and we'll try to get your next caller here. James and Mike, hold on. We're going to come to your calls. But let me pick up on where I think Darren was going, which you left off with a minute ago. And the question, anybody who grew up in the United States of America and who... is awake at all, no matter what their political perspective, knows how this nation has been defined by race.
Mm-hmm.
And knows that when everybody, whether you supported Barack Obama or didn't support Barack Obama, when you saw him standing there with his wife and children as the next president of the United States of America, and this woman is going to be the first lady of the United States of America, tears were coming down people's faces because it was a moment. And when the 57%ers, which were, I call them, the 50% of the white population who did not vote for Barack Obama,
that's right,
could not man a majority to stop a black man from becoming president of the United States of America, people are overwhelmed by that,
sure,
that moment, and still are.
Sure.
And I think one of the arguments maybe that you're having, and I'd like you and Lester to talk about this for a minute before we go to James in Baltimore, is the effect that's having, A, on his presidency, and B, on the perceptions of America, black and white, and Asian and Latino, all Americans, on this presidency and how they view it, and how difficult maybe it is to critique an administration of Barack Obama in a certain way because people still are so enthralled with the idea that we actually have someone of color sitting in the White House.
Well, see, this was my concern, though, because Obama did not rise to the presidency on the crest of a social movement. He was delivered upon us from the top down. So the question is, why would his backers, the most elite of the society, in this, you know, he only got 4 points more of funding than Kerry did from the internet. So this we have to again check that mythology too, that this was not some grassroots developed campaign. So the question is, why would the elite of this society want to change the face of an imperial power? That is the question for me. And if we look at the tradition of colonialism and neocolonialism, this is it's almost a scientific inevitability, to borrow from my Marxist cousins. I mean, this is almost predictable. And I put the challenge, I'll say it this way, because I know we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, we want to hear it. Right.
Yeah, is that when black people in particular say, we never saw this day coming, we could have never predicted this, and they say that, and they take that as a sign of progress and positivity, I want to flip it a little bit and say the fact that we didn't know who he was, most people didn't know who he was before 2007, certainly maybe not before 2004, that this is evidence of the fact that he is not from us. He is not from our efforts. Otherwise, we would have known. We would have been working for years in advance to develop him, as were his backers working years in advance to develop him into the candidate he has now become. So that is where I think is my fundamental concern.
Lester Spence?
I actually understand that perspective. I don't see where... I'm trying to find the language of... I don't see where that approach necessarily gets us in moving people to consider where he has to go, moving people to where he has to go. Right? I mean, so if you look at black mayors, if you take the feeling of people who lived in Baltimore when Smoke was maybe elected, although he was kind of a latter term, a better example would be the people who voted in Comey Young in Detroit, people who voted in Maynard in Atlanta, people who voted in, I think it was Hatcher in...
In Newark?
In Newark. No, right. Newark, yes. Like in each of those cases, you had people who had been working for the people and had a history, but they still changed, right, once they got into office. So for me, it's not about whether, you know, so the discussion about how do we, you know, about where, how much did we know about this guy before he got in, right, that the natural story that's linked up to that is kind of a conspiratorial story, which says, well, there's these elites who kind of saw where the wind was blowing and it's like, okay, we need somebody to look like we're oppressing in order to better oppress them. And I understand that, but I don't agree with that empirically. And politically, I think that's a non-starter, right? So it's much better. I would much rather us try to articulate a narrative that gets us to the place where we have people critiquing their boys. Well, yeah, my brother's in. I grew up with him. I know him all my life. What he's still doing is wrong, right? As opposed to saying, okay, well, you know, well, there's so much we didn't know about this guy. How did he, you know, how were the powers that be able to kind of sort of get him over on us to the point where we think we knew this guy?
See, actually, Professor Spence actually, I think, makes my point that the fact that if we build movements that develop political candidates who get elected and switch, then the idea that someone who did not come from our movement would not switch is, I think, that's the non-starter. I think the non-starter is actually not being able to develop a level of criticism that gets people to get past the elation to say, we do need to challenge this brother. And in fact, what I'm seeing happen is people are saying, we got him in, now let's just wait and see. And I'm saying, no, let's support the brother by organizing ourselves into social political movements that genuinely challenge this structure to make him do what Roosevelt had to do in the 30s and then beyond.
That's right.
Well, let me try to be open the phones. A lot of people have been trying to call in. They have a full bank of calls at 410-319-8888. Darren, I see you got back through again. Let me let you finish your thoughts. We can go to another caller.
I don't know what's going on. It must be your phone system.
Could be. I think it probably is. Not you, I don't think. Go ahead.
Yeah. My question earlier was, again, on the day that we were celebrating Dr. King or commemorating King on April the 4th, President Obama was meeting with NATO, and he asked for 70,000 troops to go and fight in a war. And I heard nothing from the civil rights leadership or even the white liberal left to talk about such a task being asked of on a day that we're celebrating a man of peace. And then on the day that we were celebrating the birth or the death of Jesus Christ the following Sunday, which was on the 11th, President Barack Obama is sitting in a church and said he gives orders for the taking out of three Somalians in a boat, and he couldn't do it the day before or maybe on Easter Monday, but it had to take place on the day that we're celebrating the resurrection of Christ or Yeshua. So my question would be, why is such a silence from the civil rights community and the so-called progressive left when these events occurred and President Barack Obama's first 100 days? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Darren. And let's take a few minutes for us. It's not too long. So I think we've covered a lot of foreign policy, and we want to come to some domestic policy. But I think there's a lot of people, Lester Spence, in this country left progressive, liberal, and more conservative who see a threat in the outside world, whether it's Somali pirates, and people don't usually talk about the depth of Somali pirates because they clearly have to be, nobody's writing about this at all, manipulated by something much deeper somewhere else because these poor people in Somalia are not getting these weapons and boats by themselves. Just like our drug dealers in Baltimore are not getting their drugs by themselves from Mexico. But the fact is people are scared of that. People are worried about the Taliban, the destabilization throughout the world. And so I don't think people are finding a lot of fault with that for that reason.
No, yeah, that's absolutely right. And this is the thing. This is the thing that we haven't, that we both alluded to. And as a quick side note, I really appreciate, even though the normal structure of a show like this is to kind of, again, have one guy from the right and one guy from kind of sort of the moderate right, although I know you don't roll like that. I mean, it's really refreshing. It's refreshing to be on a show with somebody where we're really just disagreeing kind of over tactics as opposed to disagreeing whether, for example, is black people's fault for poverty, you know, that type of thing. I mean, I swear to God, the last time I just called in, you had to kick me off the show because I was so pissed at the other callers.
I would never kick you off the show, Les. I could never do that.
You know, I had to kick myself off. But the thing is black people, it's not just that we've got a conservative shift among whites. Not a conservative shift among blacks to deal with, right? So in this case, with the foreign stuff, it's two levels. One is that it's really easy to depict foreigners in a way that frightens people because black people don't have that type of international connection in most places to be able to say, okay, I know this image is wrong, right? That's part of it. And then the other part of it is that we have become conservative just like whites have, only maybe not as conservative. So it makes it really difficult to administer any type of critiques. And it's especially the elites here, right? So it's not just that we got Obama in office; it's that we've got Obama in office, and the fact that, sorry, I'm actually getting out the car now, about to come up there. And the fact that they're conservative. So we've got two fronts. It's not just a front against Obama. We got a battle to fight against our own, the people we love and care for.
Take us to the phones here real fast.
See, this is what I find fundamental in Darren's question is extremely important, that one of the things that I think we have to remember is that we did not get Obama into office. I think we have to understand, again, as has been written about and talked about for decades, the president of the United States is a product. But Obama himself won Brand of the Year. He was given Brand of the Year by the PR and advertising community, beating Nike and Apple in 2008. He was funded with more funding from the elite sources of this society than any other president in world history. And so he was delivered upon us in the same way mass media, who are also in many ways tentacles of that same elite class, have delivered us upon us an image of everything from Obama to the Somali pirates you talk about. And I do want to just say there has been stuff written about the Somali situation. And in fact, agreeing with my brother Glenn Ford, South Park recently did one of the best political analyses of what happened in Somalia that you would see on commercial television. And I would direct people to check out on YouTube Davey D, who did an interview with the hip hop artist Kanan, who was a Somali talking about what the pirates are as a defense mechanism, as coast guards protecting against the West dumping all their toxins and stealing all their fish off the Somali shores and coastlines. So that whole story has been completely misunderstood, much in the same way that I think the entire Obama candidacy and presidency has been misunderstood. And so what this inertia causes is the civil rights movement leaders to not understand exactly how to approach this. Al Sharpton actually wrote a piece where he said he would not march on Obama in the same way he would on other presidents were he concerned about what was going on. So we have most of us are trying to figure out what we're going to do with this very strong chess move that has been, I think, played before us in terms of Obama's presidency.
We have to take a break, and James and Robert and Mike and Lynn are all waiting to get on the show. We want to get them on as well. And I want to challenge what you just said a little bit, Jared, when we come back, to say, is that too narrow an analysis to say that it was all put upon us? Because I think there was a surge from the people as well as was a surge from the elite, and they met, and Obama was the crest that they met on. And let's talk about that when we come back. 410-319-8888. I remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ. Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeetQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. Over 70 years later, they're still here to help during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Dr. Lester Spence has made it safely in the studio. It's good to have him in the house here, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Johns Hopkins University. You also often hear him on a number of NPR shows that are played here at the station. Dr. Jared Ball is with us, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at Morgan State University. And so we left off, and the number is 410-319-8888. And I promised we'd get right to the phones to James and Robert, who have both been holding on for an incredibly long time to have something to say here. And what I said was, as we're going to do this, just very quickly, was that is it too narrow an analysis to say that President Barack Obama was just put upon us by the elites, that this was a confluence of many events. It was the disaster of 8 years of President George Bush. It was, yes, the kind of liberal elite saying we need a new voice and a new presence, and it was the battle between whether it's going to be a black man or a white woman to have that role in America, and it was the groundswell of grassroots people. I mean, never before in the history of America have so many people of color and so many young people voted in an election. And, you know, I'm saying it was too narrow analysis to just put it that way.
Well, I think not, obviously.
Since I mean, challenge a little bit, man.
No, that's fine. Of course, everything I say should be challenged. The issue is the very fact that he was one of the major candidates from which we had to choose speaks to the fact that, as Lawrence Shoup says here, there is a hidden primary of the ruling class. As Edward Bernays said in the 20s, that there is an invisible government that confers upon us our false choices, so to assure that no matter who we vote for, the elite are protected. So it's in that respect that I'm saying that certainly the confluence of events that you talk about led to his ultimate success. However, the fact that he was one of the two that ended up from us having us as a choice speaks to the fact that he was supported by the elite, which he was. He was supported by the elite more than any other president in history, even more than Hillary.
Lester?
Well, he was supported by a elite, right? So if we had just a simple elite rendering of this, we still have an oil interest guy running the show, mm-hmm. right? So another way to think about this is to think about how much pop culture is branded and got the best packaging, but we still don't consume it. And I'm not just talking about people like you and me who might be quote-unquote conscious. I'm talking about my younger brother. I'm talking about the people in the neighborhood. Like, nah, I know they're trying to get me to buy that. That's garbage, mm-hmm. right? But there's still an agency there where people are actually saying, okay, there's something about this person I like as opposed to. So I would reframe it and say that and talk about constrained choices. Right. So what Professor Ball is saying, well, like, listen, we don't really got a choice. It's like we just got this guy. I'd say that we've got constrained choices. Right. So one way in which this moment opened up our choice range, it's not just about race, but for a while, John Edwards was in the race. John Edwards started and ended his campaign in New Orleans. Right. And nobody's shilling for the poverty vote. Right. It's not like people are like, well, you know what? I really want to throw money at the poor so they can come out and vote for me so I can win. Right. There has to be something. We can't explain his presence in the race, although we can't explain his failure. But we can't explain his presence in the race and his movement on that issue if we just talked about elites and elite machinations.
Let me open the phones to our listeners. I promise we go right to them and go to three calls in a row here. 410-319-8888. James, you've been holding on for a long time. You're on the air. James, you there? You're on the air. Turn your radio down, would you?
Okay. Hello?
You're on the air, James.
Yeah, well, the reason why I'm holding on so long, sir, my mother died as a dope fiend when I was 15, and I'm 73. And the one thing that I know, that the people like them that's talking there, they're our problems because they stay out in Anne Arundel County and places like that. And it's like Donald Trump said. He said all these people writing books on how to get rich in real estate, they don't get rich in real estate, they get rich writing books. Another thing is Obama made more money on the books that he wrote this year than all of the people you have talking to has made in a lifetime. So if he just wanted to make money like Martin Luther King could have made money, he must have some convictions to our cause. At least he was able to convince people that he was going to do that. And I, at 73 years old, have never seen the changes that have taken place in 90 days from any other president that I've witnessed. Now, I'm not educated. I don't have a degree. But you have to cater to all the people, and you have to make all of them try to understand what you're saying. Now, none of these three people that you have talking on this show can tell me that they belong to a think tank where they're trying to add something to help Obama do the job that he's assigned to. You know, don't be just like the Republicans and sit around and talk about somebody that's doing something and you ain't doing nothing but talking and writing books. See, that's all I got to say. Because, look, I'll tell you one more thing.
All right.
In New York City, every year, they need 7,000 jobs for black kids that want to go back to school, not the ones that don't want to go back to school. And in the last 8 years, because I'm in the process of doing something about that now, I've been in business since 1966. I don't have an eighth grade education. And if I had to wait for black people to help me get into those businesses, I still would not be in business. But the 7,000 people we need every year for black kids to go back to school, the black community, by them not being entrepreneurs and just doctors of theology and doctors of this, writing books, we couldn't get the 2,300 of them out of our community, and we can't get less now. And every June, when those kids get out of school, they're saying Mr. Mears in June, but when September comes, they won't even speak to you, and when they do, they speak to you in a derogatory manner because they only have two choices. Your mother either keep you in the house, or you have to join the gangs.
Okay, well, you raise, I think, James, really important issues here. And I like the perspective you bring to this discussion. Les, you're lucky you wanted to respond to James first.
Yeah, I actually can feel the dig at folks with education. But the thing is that when Mark introduced us, what he said is that I was at Johns Hopkins, and he said that Ball was at Morgan State. He didn't say, well, Lester also has five kids and is behind on his mortgage, which I am, right? He didn't say, well, Lester Spence has five kids and they're all in public schools, which they are. So what your challenge as a caller and as a citizen is, and should be, is not to listen to our labels, right? Because what you're doing is you're loading stuff onto us, which we haven't even promoted, which is the problem that Jared and I have been talking about with Obama. Right. So you hear Johns Hopkins, you're automatically thinking this guy doesn't know black people, doesn't live with black people, doesn't hang with black people, and is rich, and all he does is write books. Wrong, 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 and wrong. Right.
I just also say that knowing Lester a little bit, that Lester is also the son of auto workers who grew up in Detroit. So I just want to say that a little bit more bona fide out there as well. Yeah.
Okay, doesn't matter. But it does matter.
I mean, it says a lot.
Without just going into a defense of who I am or what I do or what my position in life is, I would just say I would agree with the caller that he should maintain this kind of criticism of scholars and a middle class and up and bougie elite and keep doing it.
410-319-8888, and Robert in Northeast, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Robert.
Okay. My perspective is a little different. And, you know, I've been reading a bit by Obama and some stuff on Obama, and this is very interesting because the fact of the matter seems to be, and that's based on reading things that he wrote and reading things about him that have appeared, for example, in The Nation and The Progressive, and it's very clear that one of the reasons he could play the role that he's playing, whether it's in the interest of the ruling class or whatever, is precisely because he does, in fact, have an activist and a progressive background. Now, that doesn't guarantee that he's going to maintain a progressive commitment in office, but he does have that background. I don't think that's insignificant. But what's perhaps more significant even than that, for me, is that there is a kind of movement. It's not organized yet. It's not self-conscious. It's not very clear in its direction. But there's been some demographic shifts in American society I don't think it's insignificant. I don't want to make too much of it, but I don't think it's insignificant that an African American is elected president. We can say it's due to the economic situation, but I doubt that it would have happened in the Depression. Now, there's been a shift here in American society, and apparently, if nothing else, the public has gotten tired of the right. And the other old-line Democrats, they're, of course, all worn out. I mean, in one sense, Obama sort of steps into a vacuum within the, you know, the corporate government.
Right.
But what's important to me is the following. That is the coalescence of popular forces that made his victory possible. And I think that's not insignificant. But it's important to me that that movement, that potential movement, gets organized and gets to be more conscious than it is. Now, you mentioned, I don't know if it was last week, week before last, whenever. I'm talking about you, Mike.
Yeah, Mark, yeah.
You mentioned, and I've seen that before, that now only half of the American population believe that capitalism is better than socialism. And as many as one-fifth may now believe that socialism is better than capitalism. And it's not insignificant. Not that I think people are fully conscious of what all this means, but the fact that that many people are beginning to think that, or that I remember reading a letter in the Baltimore Sun, in which the person says, well, look, if Obama's program means that a bunch of rich fat cats who make more in a day than I make in a year have to pay more taxes and I get to pay less, and that's what they call socialism, and call me comrade. Now, this guy isn't some Marxist cat.
Robert, there's a lot of calls.
I'm trying to suggest quite simply that we may need to look at something that is a bit larger than Obama himself. There's something going on in society. He may be, however inadequately, the symbol of it. But I think there's something else going on. I would like to pose one question before I leave.
But very quick, because we have a lot of callers here.
I want to pose one question very quickly. I've been reading, I've been doing some work and research on the thought of Dr. King, and one thing I'm thinking about is the whole question of the movement for economic justice and his whole talk about a poor people's campaign. And I'm wondering whether it is time for us to revisit that idea. And maybe this period is a time for us to be doing that.
It's past time.
Robert, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really past time. I think you're right. One of the problems with 100-day type analyses is that it's really easy for us to focus kind of sort of on the guy and the specific moment without talking about without fully necessarily connecting that to the larger picture. To that degree, I remember seeing that stat. And as someone who does statistical stuff, who does public opinion stuff, that's not just a blip. So the question is how do we create the spaces and the venues and neighborhoods and in the various media institutions where we can push Obama and other elected officials on that, both locally and federally?
Yeah, I would just say, let me just say very quickly, I think that people need to join organizations, become politically organized, and push to develop political pressure based on this popular will. Because history, I think, is pretty clear in this country, many others, I'm sure, that the popular will is almost irrelevant. If the popular will carried the day, then again, we would not be in these wars. We would have a national Medicare-based healthcare system and many other things that we're not getting. So I think that that's why I'm saying that we have to marshal this popular will. And the agency that Brother Spence mentioned a minute ago is what, as I think, being protected against by these moves by those in power, that they are preparing to blunt the agency that would carry us into this movement, because they fear it. They struggle. They write eloquently and at length about the potential of a grassroots political will overtaking their position in society. So I think we need to find ways of, again, organizing ourselves and get over the elation of Obama, and then to again, as the caller was suggesting, bring some substance and organization so that we can get some things. I mean, we would have an Employee Free Choice Act passed already if popular will were involved in this situation. And yet we haven't seen him move on this or even speak about it publicly, for that matter. And I think, dare I say again, we would even have had official participation in the World Conference Against Racism, which he refused to support again just recently.
Which maybe should be a show by itself. And I think we have, because I want to get to this, I want to get another caller in here too, but I really want to focus in the time we have remaining on domestic policy and the stimulus package, and whether or not traditional issues of the traditional power of Wall Street and Capitol Hill power has been challenged in this administration the first 100 days, well or not. 410-319-8888. Don, we'll go to you first, though. Don, you there?
Saturday.
Message two.
All right, so let's go to Joanne, two, who's been holding on.
Four.
Go to Joanne, please. All right, Joanne, you're on the air.
Great, hi.
Hi.
I was thinking, I'm not like a biblical scholar or anything. I'm not, in fact, I'm an atheist, but I'm thinking that Obama has a lot of similarities here to Moses, and that he came up, someone else was saying how he didn't come up through the black community. He came up through the other community, you know, the larger, whiter community outside, and like Moses came up from the Egyptians. As a result, that's how he got his power. That's how he helped to bring his people out of slavery, out of captivity. But that also meant that, and I don't know if this is going to be true for him, that he can't really go the full distance. And I'm wondering if you guys might have...
I would just love to say I can't resist this opportunity that as all good atheists, first of all, atheists and biblical scholar are not mutually exclusive. So, but I would say that I would borrow your analogy to say that much like Sigmund Freud wrote in his last book, Moses and Monotheism, the issue is what happens to the mythology, what happens to a community when they find out that their founding mythology is in fact a borrowed story. So as Freud was saying, Moses was an African priest, not an enslaved, escaped Hebrew or Jew, then we would see that Obama is not the savior placed before us, leading us anywhere but back to our captors.
410-319-8880. We'll come back to the phones in a minute. Let's just talk a bit about power, Wall Street, power on Capitol Hill, and where the money has been shifted and going in terms of the bailout. Banks are still not offering loans to people. They're making huge profits, not offering loans. People, the mortgage foreclosures are rising. Banks are so there's a lot of conversation about how we're stimulating or not stimulating the economy and how that should be done. What's your assessment of that? Lester, Jared?
I think that this is an interesting moment for people who study capital, because what you see is it's not that a president protects capital. It's like in this case, what you have is there's the manufacturing capital, which kind of sort of loses out, and then you've got the banking capital, which actually wins out. So on one level, that's really an interesting discussion. But the other thing, there is no other. So I'm thinking about James, the caller a couple of days ago, where he says in 90 days he's seen all these changes. And then he talks about, at the same time, a number of things that haven't really changed much. I know a number of people who are basically walking away from their homes, and I haven't seen a single thing that Obama's done that's been able to deal with that. So we can talk about the stuff at the large scale where he's trickling down money to the bank, giving money to the banks, thinking that they're going to trickle that money down to us. We know that stuff never works, right? So the question is how do we get pressure to get him to even think about even moderate moves to the left where, for example, instead giving people the opportunity to rent their homes, to rent in their homes instead of being foreclosed on. I mean, those are the type of things that I very rarely see. Like, I saw an article in The Nation about it today, but nobody's really talking about it.
You know, I would like to start with what I heard Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur say from Ohio, that if Thoreau's listening, and I have been close to this myself, if you get a foreclosure notice, don't leave. In part because they can't find the original loan, the loan that has been resold and resold and repackaged and resold. So don't leave and it will be hard to get rid of you. I would just say that. But this is the problem, that the very people that created this crisis are the very people Obama selected to be his advisors and in his cabinet. So this is one of my biggest concerns, that when he says he inherited this crisis, it's a little disingenuous considering the people that, again, he surrounded himself with created it. So I think we need to see that he is working for Wall Street and Goldman Sachs in particular and others. And that's why we don't see the movement on these issues. We don't see the moratorium on foreclosures. We don't see him dealing with what, and I know you just had him on your show recently, Diedrich Muhammad, a good another good comrade, colleague, brother of mine, who said in the report that he's working on that's forthcoming that a third of black children are in poverty now. By 2010, 50% of black children will be have been in poverty, and by 2011, 40% of black people in general will have been at one point or another unemployed. And nothing that I see coming down the line is going to deal with this. And I think if we extrapolate from that, we would see that this would have a negative impact not only on the black community, but Latin Americans, working class, white folks, etc. Which is why my biggest concern during the a major concern of mine during his campaign was that Obama never said poverty. He never said poor people. He said everything about middle class, which was code language for let's protect this mythology of underclass ideology, meaning that if you are poor, you deserve to be, and we're only going to help those who deserve it, i.e. the middle class, which is a fundamental problem and a fundamental misrepresentation of how capitalism works.
So let's go ahead.
Which is now he actually did. So Edwards actually talked about poverty in length. And Obama actually did talk about poverty. He actually had a platform on his webpage about poverty, but he hasn't followed up on that stuff at all. And most of his rhetoric, it reproduced the same Bill Cosby stuff, the same stuff blaming black people, hence the poor in general, for their condition, right? But we have a situation now where the poor we can just write off. So there's nothing being done for them. But he's not even doing anything for the middle class, for the professionals who are losing their jobs. So people are walking away from their homes in places like Detroit, who just got laid off from the automotive industry. They're walking away from their homes in droves. Right? This is the first time in their lives they have to deal with this type of poverty. And there's nothing Obama's doing
You said it quite well that he's extending this mythology that Ronald Reagan popularized of trickle down economics, where, as he says himself very clearly, stimulus package is really a public subsidy of private business. We're going to use our tax dollars to give our money to private businesses with this mythology and hope that they're going to hire people who can then use their paychecks to go back and spend money. Not save, not invest, etc.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful what we're looking at here and be very, I think, critical of it at least.
Extremely critical.
So let's just mention someone who, when we've had conversations on the air before, that, and you've written some very moving things about Barack Obama and his election and the article you had in the Johns Hopkins magazine recently.
Mm-hmm.
So you seem more disillusioned and disappointed than you were when we first began this conversation.
I've actually been at that point, right? But the thing is, there is something about a black guy being elected, right? So I was one of the people who was actually at the Mall on Washington. I went to bed at 12 in the morning, got up at 3 in the morning to hit down, and we hit the Mall on Washington at 4:30 in the morning, right? It was a brutal day. I'm glad I was there. But I'm glad I was at the Million Man March, and the Million Man March was incredibly conservative, right? It's not about me being torn, but it's about me being able to take the fact that we've got a black man and a black family in the office and say, wow, this is culturally powerful for me being a father, a husband, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, me being a conscious scholar and activist, right, or activist, someone who aspires to that, I can say, well, no, you look at his policies, every single one of them hurts the populations I care about. And that's something I have to rail against. And in railing against that, I can get him to actually live up to the higher standard for me that Ball referenced earlier, the higher standard of blackness, right? So Chris Rock joked on black people. He was like, you know, you're supposed to take care of your kids. Why would you brag about the fact that you take care of your kids? For me, he's supposed to be brilliant and powerful because he's a black man in the most powerful position in the free world. He's supposed to do that. But he's supposed to be a whole lot more, right? That's what being black means to me. And that's what we have to get other people to see.
Gentlemen, this has been just a very fascinating look at the first 100 days, probably different than we've heard on most radio shows, I think.
Better believe it, buddy.
And in the last few days.
That's hope.
And I do appreciate you all for being here and being part of this discussion, and we're glad to have you both back. I got to make sure I find your academic schedule so we can actually get you on the air.
I like this duo, man. This duo is dope.
Yeah, Dr. Lester Spence, assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, has written a wonderful piece in the Johns Hopkins magazine, the April edition, that I read and I think is well worth reading. Dr. Jared Ball, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies here at Morgan State University, guest on the show. And that article I read of yours was where? What's that article written?
The Black Scholar.
Black Scholar. Yeah. It was also just a fascinating piece. So if you can get those two articles, we'll put them on our website. You can link to them, steinershow.org. You can see what these two men are writing and what they're thinking. And it's been a pleasure to have you both in the air with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the question of racism, immigration, and citizenship, and an interesting conference coming up here in Baltimore. Some of those people who are putting that conference together are joining us. I'm going to remind you, the Maryland Film Festival runs from May 7th through the 10th. It's the region's premier film event with over 130 films from all over the world, with filmmakers and other surprises. For details and to purchase tickets to guarantee you can get in to see the movies you want, go to mdfilmfest.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.